Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands. Jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubiconglobal.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everyone, and welcome to a very cool episode of The Town Hall. Today, I have a few guests with me via Skype from across the world to talk all things recycling, repurposing, and the right way to manage waste. Normally, now at this point, I would kind of intro our guests, but I'm going to let you guys do that. Let's do a little bit of a round table to get started. Instead of me introducing you guys and prompting, let's just take a second to get to know each other better before we go in depth about the sustainability solutions. So, Adi, let's start with you. Everyone just kind of go around, introduce yourself, where you're from, what sparked your passion for sustainability, and why you're joining me today on the Town Hall. And you know, I know it feels a bit like summer camp, but this is the first episode with people in multiple time zones. So I figured that would be the best way to get started.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Amy. My name is Aditya Saroya. I am a rising senior at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania and a co-founder of Repurpose. I am from Bangalore. I've lived in Bangalore all my life. And growing up, I've always been inclined towards creating social impact with whatever I do. I started a nonprofit when I was in school called the William Lee Foundation, focused on helping autistic young adults get paid employment through modeling. Coming to Penn, I discovered the world of social entrepreneurship and met my co-founders, Peter and Swanika. And we set off on this path to create Repurpose. And what got me interested in sustainability in particular was, and waste in particular, was the kind of dual impact angle that waste has. If we can better manage our waste in a more inclusive manner, not only are we creating environmental impact by intercepting waste before it reaches landfills, and also we're creating social impact by incorporating the most marginalized workers and most marginalized sections of society into the formal economy. So that's what got me really interested in waste as well.
Wilma?
Yeah, hi. This is Wilma Rodrigues from Sahas Zero Waste in Bangalore. It's been a good 18 years since waste was something that, you know, really caught my attention in India, and decided that, you know, rather than being frustrated with all the issues around it, especially because in India, 18 years ago, the country introduced its first set of, you know, the municipal solid waste rules, which were guidelines as to how waste should be actually addressed, the problem of waste should be addressed. So I started Sahas in 2001, looking for to support all the waste generators, actually follow guidelines, follow rules, and, you know, address the waste problem through conversion to resources. So today, the organization has two entities, one of which is the NGO Sahas, but I am the CEO and founder of Sahas Zero Waste, which is actually a for-profit social enterprise that currently manages about 50 tons of waste per day. We do it through working closely with waste, all kinds of waste generators, but in particular, what we call the bulk waste generators, that is the large tech parks, the large apartment complexes, you know, entities that generate more than one ton of waste per day. And we look at solutions around wet waste through composting and biogas. We look at all kinds of recyclable or dry waste, which is paper, plastic, metal, glass. How does one collect it? We do collect it. We aggregate it, we compact it, and then we send it to different recyclers. And then we, you know, also look at work with brands and with producers so that they also take responsibility for their voice and we can channel take back and a reverse logistics system. We also have a sale of products, and that's how we close the loop and bring waste back into our living spaces. Waste is something that, you know, today is increasingly not just looked at as a problem, but also a good opportunity, you know, to address the environment issues around it, but also to create jobs. So at Sahas Zero Waste, we are a team of 253 people, 60% of whom are women, 80% of whom are, you know, people from low economic or the BOP, base of pyramid households. So really, this whole situation is such that, you know, the opportunity is around creating better environment and also creating a lot of jobs in that process.
I love that. So let's dive right in. We're going to talk about repurpose first.
Amy, I think Swanika is also online.
Swanika, are you here?
Yeah, hello. So I'm Swanika Balasubramanian, and I was born in India, but I grew up in the Middle East. And so I really spent most of my life in Oman. It's kind of this like little country on the coast of the Arabian Sea. And it's just very beautiful. And I grew up next to the beach and kind of on the sands of the shores. And all my life, I had this kind of connection with the sea, so to speak. And when I came to the US for my undergrad, I was in Wharton, so like Adi, I was also doing business, but really my passion was kind of always finding that intersection of using for-profit models and sustainable business models, but to create some kind of sustainable change. And I think my background in India also really helped, because my grandparents, my great-grandparents, they'd always kind of been activists in India. They were freedom fighters for the Indian independence movement, and they were caste right activists and so on. And so when it came, I guess, to be my turn, I knew that I wanted to do something in India. I wanted it to be something that helped our oceans, helped the planet, so to speak, and something at the same time that combined my business education and really kind of packaged it in a more financially sustainable model. And so that's really how Repurpose came to be. And I think, I'm not sure if Adi spoke about this already, but really, I guess what sealed the deal was when the three of us, we had this opportunity to kind of walk through Devnar, which is one of Asia's largest landfills. And it was kind of just this incredible sight of walking through mountains of waste towering on either side of you. And you're clenching your nose at the flies and the smell of it. And you're seeing this like glittering skyline in the horizon. And it's just a very real feeling that something had to change and we needed to really take action here. And I think at that point, for all three of us, we just knew that this was something that we definitely wanted to pursue and see how we could kind of help.
That's exactly why we're here today. We're, you know, ultimately the goal of the four of us chatting is going to be to kind of educate and inspire our target audience about recycling practices and things going on around the world that they may not know about. So let's dive right in and talk about Repurpose first. So Repurpose is a global movement of conscious consumers, which is a phrase that we use a lot when talking about our millennial audience, businesses and brands going plastic neutral by empowering waste workers worldwide. So whoever wants to hop on this question first, walk me through the Repurpose story. How did you all get started and how do you carry out the mission of waste industry empowerment?
Yeah, I can maybe get started, and Adi, you can, hop on after to kind of just give a little bit more info. But for us, I mean, I guess if we're going with where we were outside the landfills and, you know, looking at Devnar, we spent a little bit of time. So Adi grew up in Bangalore. Peter, our third co-founder, is Chinese-Norwegian. And really, for all three of us, we didn't have a very deep expertise of like the informal recycling sector, so to speak. And so the first thing that we did once we realized that we wanted to kind of become a player in this space was to say that, okay, let's embed ourselves in the ecosystem. Let's understand its weaknesses. Let's understand its strengths. And then we can decide how we can come in and how we can add value value. And so we spent many months kind of working with organizations like Sahas, with people like Wilma, to really understand what was going on in India and around the world when it came to recycling. And just a background about this, I think this is something that not many people realize, and it's something that we didn't realize either in the beginning, was that a lot of waste in the world gets shipped around. And so the developing world has for a long time been almost used as a dumping ground for the rest of the world's waste. And so if we look at the United States, if we look at Europe, countries around the world take their waste and they ship it to countries like India, like China, until the ban there recently, and to kind of process it. So we were kind of looking at this geopolitical context that was also coming into play. There was all this waste that was coming into India, that was coming into, say, the Philippines and Indonesia. And these countries just did not have the right infrastructure to deal with it in an ethical and efficient way. And because of that, there was this vibrant informal sector that had formed around it, where you had the most marginalized people in the country, like the most impoverished, who would spend their days looking in landfills and looking on streets for recyclable waste that they would, you know, have this bag on their shoulders. You would spend all their day kind of looking through the landfills, trying to find anything of recyclable value. And at the end of the day, they would bring it back to maybe a local scrap dealer, and they would make less than $1 to $5 a day. And this entire supply chain that was created around this waste industry was informal in nature, and it was unregulated by the government, and therefore very inherently exploitative in nature. And so there was very little bargaining power for the base of pyramid people. And I think Wilma can definitely speak a little bit more to that, because that's been what she's been working on for a long time now, and how do we empower these people. And so we said, okay, you know, like, there is this informal sector, about 20 million people around the world, some of the world's poorest, are trying to tackle our waste problem, and we should be empowering them. We should be helping them and treating them as the environmental heroes that they are. So that's kind of how Repurpose came to be, where we said, let's identify models around the world that are trying to formalize this sector, that are trying to both have the socioeconomic value add of uplifting these waste pickers by giving them formal livelihoods, and at the same time have this environmental value add of being able to recycle and process waste more efficiently. And our focus is on plastic waste. And so that's kind of where Repurpose came in. And we said, maybe we can be this party that enables this ecosystem and funds this ecosystem by connecting people around the world to the people in developing countries that are trying to combat. So the first thing that we did really was onboard organizations like Sahas. And we're working with three organizations right now: Waste Ventures in Hyderabad, Sahas in Bangalore, and Asra in Mumbai. And all three were really vetted for a long time to the core of their expertise, organizations that really had the capacity and the capability to take recycling and formalization of recycling to the next level. And so then we onboarded these organizations and worked with them to kind of come up with the model that we have right now. And Amy, as you kind of rightly read out, what we do is we allow individuals, brands, workplaces the opportunity to measure their plastic footprint, offset it at 25 cents per pound, and then we help them reduce their plastic consumption and engage with it. And so that middle part, the offsetting, is really, I think, where like all of our initial innovation came in, where now we're guaranteeing that for every 25 cents, through our organizations like Sahas, we're able to intercept one additional pound of ocean-bound or landfill-bound plastic and recycle it instead. And this is 100% additionality, because this is plastic that would not have gotten collected or recycled otherwise. And so with these organizations, we kind of looked at the fixed cost and the variable cost, and that's where we came up with this number of 25 cents a pound and this three-step process of measure, offset, and reduce. But yeah, that's, I guess, like a very high-level story of how Repurpose came to be.
I want to talk about a couple things, one of which was really eye-opening for me. So I do a lot of research before I record an episode, and the low-hanging fruit is always to check out the website. So I was kind of perusing the Repurpose website, and I decided to use the online calculator. You know, I'm a sucker for a good online quiz, to calculate my annual plastic footprint, something that I found was really fascinating and kind of walked you through your daily habits and stuff. And I was pretty on par with the average American, although I am, you know, working at Rubicon and working in this industry, taking real steps to get better and even trying out some zero waste practices for the blog and in and out of the office. But the crazy part for me was that my usage was 931% higher than the average Indian. The results of the assessment told me that, like, collecting the same amount of plastic as my annual footprint will take 6 days for a waste picker in India's landfills and streets, and that they only earn, I think, a little more than $15 in the informal industry. So clearly I need a little bit of help. I followed the prompt on the website to learn how to get that number down, and you guys have created a really unique step-by-step system. So my next question, I really kind of want you guys to break down hashtag plastic neutral, break down the calculator, and how someone can become a rebalancer and the step-by-step system to do that.
Yeah, I'd love to go into that. So, of course, the process of going plastic neutral entails three steps, as Swanika outlined nicely. The first step is obviously understanding how much an individual contributes to the problem, an individual or an organization. We deliberately added the concept of measurement, even though it is extremely difficult, because too often, the way plastic is communicated is in magnitudes. 8 million tons of plastic enter the ocean every year. Or by 2050, there'll be more plastic in the ocean than fish. These kinds of statements, while extremely important in terms of framing the problem, also can lead to inaction because it makes the individual think that they can't change things. And what we wanted to make sure people understand is that an individual's contribution to the problem is extremely high. And if we all start to take steps to reduce our own plastic consumption and offset our own plastic consumption, we can make tangible dents into the bank of plastic pollution that we have today. So the first step is we measure your plastic footprint through an interactive calculator. We are fully transparent about the fact that we know that the calculator is not perfect because plastic is ubiquitous. It is in every aspect of our lives, from our clothes to our shoes to our phones to our laptops to what we eat, what we drink. It's literally everywhere. And therefore, it is obviously really impossible to accurately tell how much plastic you are consuming. What we can do, and what our measurement tool tries to do, is understand the areas of your consumption to estimate in kilograms or pounds how much plastic you're using. And what we are sure of is that we are underestimating and not overestimating, because we're not counting so many things that go in that you use plastic in. So the first step is we measure how much plastic you use. And this is based on your consumption patterns. The second step is reduction, where we want to help you reduce your plastic footprint through personalized recommendations just for you. I think, again, here there's a difference in the way we are trying to communicate recommendations. All of this information, people are overflooded with things to do, with steps to take, but none of these are incentivized and actionable for the person because they are not curated to each of our individual consumption habits. For example, I don't want to be told to carry a water bottle around because I've been doing that since I was a kid. I want recommendations that are curated based on my consumption patterns. And that's what we try to do through our conscious living system, where every 2 weeks or every month, we send you one tip. And again, the emphasis on quality of tips and not the quantity. We don't want to flood users with recommendations. We want to give very targeted, actionable recommendations that they actually follow up on. So we send one tip every month into your inbox, and we create a community of people like you who are following the same tip. We gamify the system, incentivizing the adoption of the recommendation by partnering with sustainable product brands that are offering plastic-free alternatives and giving the consumers on our platform discount codes for these products. So that's the second step, which is reduction. And the third step is the offset. And this, I think Swanika did a great job of explaining, and I'm sure Wilma will have a lot of thoughts. Essentially, the offset is a way to take action on our global contribution, on our contribution to the global problem of plastic pollution. When we consume plastic, we don't just consume it in Philadelphia or in Bombay. We consume it and it's in the world forever, right? The bottle that we're drinking and throw away in 10 minutes is going to be in the world forever in the form of microplastics. And we've added to the global bank of plastic pollution. And therefore, we allow consumers to take out an equivalent amount of plastic waste through the offset payment, and therefore neutralize their impact on the environment, to be responsible for the removal of an equivalent amount of waste that they've contributed to. So through the offset step, want to support organizations like Sahas that are doing an amazing job. I mean, Wilma is one of the pioneers in the waste management sector in India, and we're extremely lucky to be working with individuals and leaders like her to allow them to scale up and expand their impact and create additional impact, both environmental by collecting low-value plastic waste that would not otherwise have been collected, and in the process, empowering the workers that actually do this collection.
So, Wilma, talk a little bit about Sahas and the zero waste vision and, you know, what Sahas is doing for conscious waste management.
Yeah, you know, the thing is that for a long time, there has been this narrative about waste, you know, being converted to wealth. Actually, this is a good kind of buzzword or a buzz statement, but only it kind of, you know, many consumers in India believed that if they use a lot of items and if they somehow bring these, you know, whether it's plastic or paper, to the informal sector, to the waste pickers, you know, they will be creating livelihoods and their waste is actually getting recycled. So in India, it typically for scrap items like newspapers, like, you know, even bottles, even plastic bottles, the informal sector would actually pay, you know, the consumers for these products, because finally these items would be sold. And so there would be some kind of revenue for the waste pickers as well. But actually, this whole system has been quite exploitative. And on the other hand, it's also, you know, not given the true picture. Because if you look at the spectrum of waste, you know, whether it's India or whether it's America or anywhere in the world, basically the quantities or the volumes or the percentage of waste that brings you revenues is barely 10%, because there is 90% of the waste which is really very low grade and which is waste which is difficult to recycle. In many cases, recycling, you know, is expensive and it's not really there as, you know, a solution at all. So what in India was happening is that this conversation of waste to wealth was actually just taking care of a very small percentage of waste, whereas the rest of the waste, like, you know, what we see at Deonar and all the other landfills in India, that is the 90% of low-grade waste, which does not have any value and which then therefore gets dumped. And when that dump becomes so big, you know, a big mountain, it gets burned, and the repercussions of health and environment is tremendous. So we as an organization, right from the start, were clear that we want to work with the, you know, the entire spectrum of waste, whether it brings in economic value or whether it is low grade, because collectively that entire volume of waste has to be addressed. So our business model is on revenues from waste, but a service fee. Now, this is common elsewhere in the world, you know, in the form of polluter pays principle, in the form of, you know, everywhere generators pay for waste management services. But in India, this is now just about starting and this is getting accepted. It's there in the regulations. And we do believe now that, you know, this would be hopefully the way forward. But currently, we are one of the few organizations that actually, you know, has a customer base where people therefore pay us for these waste management services. And the way we work then is that the team that is part of our team, you know, we make sure that they work in conditions which are structured, you know, which have processes, which of course, you know, give them some kind of protection. And at the end of the month, you know, we make sure that they at least get minimum wages, which the informal sector very often does not really, you know, have access to. In addition to that, there are statutory labor requirements, you know, social security in the form of health benefits, in the form of what we call a provident fund. So our movement, therefore, from, you know, getting the informal sector into a formal process is more or less through giving them jobs. And we do realize that the informal sector also has got good creativity, in the sense that there are people out there who are also entrepreneurial, who would like to continue as entrepreneurs. So whilst we engage, or rather whilst we have the team working with us, you know, with a regular employment situation, we also reach out to the informal sector, the scrap dealers, etc., and partner with them. And today our partnership is such that, you know, we are trying to bring them into a formal process by insisting that this partnership involves, you know, certain deliverables from their end as well, so that they work in conditions which are, you know, acceptable, which are formal, which pay their own staff minimum wages. So that's where, you know, the partnership with Repurpose also becomes meaningful, because, you know, these kind of systems are very difficult to put into a business model. Right now, with the support that we will get over the next few months, you know, through the offset monies that come in, we will be able to therefore work a little bit more with the scrap dealers, so that they, you know, bring them into a better system of working. So really, we are happy that, you know, this kind of, I think this is one of the first kind of platforms that have been formed, and we hope to, you know, be able to scale it up quickly and really have more scrap dealers in the system. But I'd also like here to mention the fact that the reason why perhaps Europe or America has not been recycling to the extent that they should and have been exporting a lot of waste is precisely because, you know, whilst consumption is one thing, the end of life material is something that a lot of research has to go into. And that kind of research has not happened to date. So we hope that in speaking about, you know, these kind of issues now, and now that China and many other countries, Asian countries, India, we hope will also follow suit, will stop accepting, you know, waste from other countries. And so therefore, each country will therefore have to be self-sufficient in the way it manages its waste. So to that extent, I think a lot of work needs to be done, especially in the developing countries, so that, you know, we can learn from them also how low grade or difficult plastic gets recycled.
So I took some notes on my computer before we, and you, Wilma, you literally just, you know, answered a lot of the questions that I had.
You That's know, what aside, 20 years of experience in the sector can give you.
I mean, that was fantastic. And aside from the environment, I mean, Adi, maybe you want to talk about some of the social implications of plastic pollution and proper waste management in, you know, an underdeveloped country or an urban environment. You know, we talked now, and you mentioned before, about why we should care about recycling in countries that we don't necessarily live in, because you're right, it lives in our universe. But aside from the environment, what does improper recycling management look like in a social construct?
Yeah, for sure. And Wilma, feel free to add on to whatever I say. So I think this isn't often, I mean, it's barely mentioned in the conversation around plastics, right? Like when we talk about plastic pollution, we only talk about the dolphin that's getting choked by a sea bag, or the infamous turtle with the straw in its nose. That I think is extremely important. And of course, it is horrible that there's such widespread damage to marine and wild ecosystems. It is also an overlooked aspect that plastic has immense social implications on human life, and not just plastic, but waste in general. Across the world, we as consumers have offloaded the burden of dealing with our waste to sections of the society that are extremely marginalized historically. Across the world, not just in India, not just in the developing world, this happens in the US as well, where Black and brown communities of color are increasingly disproportionately facing the effects of climate change and of waste. But coming back to India a bit, a great example of this is the area around Devnar dumping ground. It's called Shivaji Nagar. It's in M East Ward or Govandi. And this area has, which lives in close proximity to the dumping, to Asia's second largest dumping ground. It's comprised entirely of waste workers. All of the people there are living in informal settlements and are barely able to afford their meals because the waste industry is such an exploitative and unfair one. The life expectancy in this part of Mumbai, and again, this is Mumbai, the booming financial capital of India, the life expectancy in this region is less than 40, which is 10 years lower than the country with the lowest life expectancy, which is, I think, Sierra Leone, which is absolutely appalling. And when I found that out, it was just so mind-boggling to me that there is no conversation around this, absolutely, not in India, not across the world. And we are immensely overlooking a humanitarian crisis that is the result of the way we are consuming and disposing of our waste.
Before we wrap up, I did want to get some insights from the experts. You know, we all need to be held accountable for our own waste. I think that that's something that we talked about today. So I feel really good that, you know, I took the first step to go plastic neutral. I know
congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you very much. I know I sent you guys, you know, what is the impact that offsetting my plastic footprint will have?
Swanika?
Yeah, I can take that. I think as an individual, like Adi was saying a little bit before, the most important thing that we want to know while we take steps like this is that our contribution has been meaningful, that there's something really tangible and efficient that has come out of the action that we've taken. And so now that you've gone plastic neutral, Yaimi, congratulations.
Thank you.
What happens is that the first step is what did you mention your plastic footprint was?
My plastic footprint was, my usage is 931% higher than the average consumer in India, which, you know, didn't make me feel very great. Although it was, I think, 13% higher than the average American.
So I think it should be about 200 pounds now. Like about that, that's the kind of, you know, where the average American about 13% higher would stand.
It's 250, Swanika. I think Amy's consumption is just so on the back end. It's 200.
Oh, okay. 250. Yeah. So
oh,
exactly.
No, that's even worse, guys.
Sorry to call you out, Amy, but yeah. Reduce your footprint now.
But that's also where we can, I guess, come in. So I think the first step now that you've gone plastic neutral, Amy, is we say that, okay, Amy, you as an individual, you've put out 250 pounds of plastic into the world this year because of how you're consuming and your lifestyle habits. And what we will do now, because of this payment that you've made, is that take 250 pounds out of our ecosystems. So 250 pounds of plastic that would have otherwise been sitting in our oceans or sitting in our landfills and kind of destroying our environment, now because of your direct contribution, get taken out and get processed instead. So on a net basis, you have gone plastic neutral because you've taken responsibility for your own consumption. So that's, I guess, what happens on the first environmental level, which is where we get this 250 pounds of plastic out of the ecosystem. Then second, which goes back to Adi and Bulma's points about the social aspect. And so in doing so, what we're doing is kind of empowering all these waste workers and allowing these different waste workers to be formalized into systems like that of Saha's and funding their wages and funding their social impact programs. And so I think, Amy, while you went plastic neutral, you had the option of choosing which organization you wanted to send your funds to, Saha's, Waste Ventures, or ASRA. And each of them are conducting a different social impact programs with their beneficiaries. And so if you went with Saha's, you would kind of be contributing to the upliftment of waste worker colonies and the socioeconomic benefits that they get, whether in terms of healthcare benefits or financial inclusion and so on. So that's also the pot of money that you have contributed to. So that's the second part. And finally, the third one is, again, with Repurpose, we really, really believe that it doesn't just stop with recycling. It also has to be about reduction and it has to be about personalized reduction. And so now what's going to happen is that every 2 weeks, you're going to start receiving very customized and very personalized tips and tools from Repurpose that target your consumption patterns and give you very actionable steps to take, I guess, to reduce it. And this will vary from product recommendations by showing you, oh, maybe, you know, you spend a lot of plastic in clothing and in fashion. So we introduce you to all these alternative fashion companies that are more sustainable and give you actionable steps to work with them. Or on the other hand, there could be something about behavioral recommendations to kind of change how you consume plastic on an everyday basis. And so then you get to do this and we have challenges that you can take on with the community around you so that you feel like you're part of this combined journey and it's not just you alone. And so hopefully through the course of the year, you keep getting these recommendations, you keep getting these tips and tools from us to reduce your plastic consumption, such that at the end of the year, maybe next year on June 3rd, when you take this plastic calculator, the measurement tool again, you're no more ahead of the average. And perhaps maybe, you know, we can bring it down, cut it down by 50%, 60%. So that's a hope. And so that's a third point. So I guess to kind of just go over it, the first step that you've done is you've made sure that your 250 pounds of plastic get taken out of the ecosystem. Second, in doing so, you've made sure that there are people, the impoverished segment that has for a long time been a victim to our plastic pollution problems are now getting the support that they need. And finally, now going forward, you're going to be taking steps steps to reduce your plastic consumption. And so that's kind of like a future looking solution. So those are, I guess, yeah, the three things that you can feel good about that you've accomplished today.
Yeah, I mean, this is such important work. And, you know, as the host of a sustainability podcast, I would love to edit this whole last 15 minutes out. I'm not going to. It's really important. And if my consumption is 250 pounds and I work in the industry, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are higher, and it's pretty eye-opening to see. And we've been making great strides. You know, at Rubicon, we have, you know, a zero waste lifestyle kind of an office and things like that. And you think that you're doing such a great job and you can always do better. And I actually do feel more actionable and do feel better about some of the choices that I've made today. So thank you guys so much for the time. You know, I appreciate the flexibility, the honesty, Adi, the crossing of the time zone and the passion on everyone's end to make this episode work. I mean, I really am, like I said, I'm truly inspired by all of the work that you guys are doing. And I think a lot of our listeners are going to walk away as more conscious consumers and maybe want to find out their own plastic consumption and, you know, like we were talking about, accountability and own up to the effects of that consumption. So thank you guys. Thank you, everybody. And thank you, Wilma, for giving everyone a way to begin to offset some of those. So where can people learn more about you guys, about your mission and vision, and how to get started on their own journey?
Yeah, just honestly, thank you so much, Amy. Like, we're so happy to have had this opportunity to speak about our work. And as a quick plug, I think for all the listeners out there, we're so happy that we got to, I guess, carry this conversation with you. And we'd love for you as individuals to go on www.repurpose.global and take action for you as a consumer. But I guess going one step forward, you know, everyone out there works somewhere. And if you think your workplace, your office, you know, your organization also can be a little bit more sustainable, we have a lot of solutions that we customize for workplaces as well, and for brands and bigger organizations that follow the same steps, which is we measure their plastic footprint, help them offset it, and help them reduce it as well. And so listeners, I mean, more than happy to kind of work with you to take your organization or your workplace plastic neutral with you as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Amy.
Amazing. I mean, I just have to say technology is amazing. You know, we're all in different places in different time zones, and I'm going to go get some breakfast. I think you guys, it's maybe dinner time over there.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. And I'd also love for the listeners to check out all the amazing work that Sahas and Wilma have been working on over the last two decades at their website. It's Wilma, would love
Sahas
for you to...
Sahas Zero Waste. Yeah. It's sahaszerowaste.com. You can look at it.
Please. Yeah. And there's links on the links on Repurpose website as well, if that helps.
Yeah. They are really the pioneers of the Indian waste management sector and deserve all the credit in the world for really radically rethinking how waste is handled in India.
Thank you. Thank you, Aditya.
Absolutely. Thanks. Thank you guys for being sustainability superstars.
Thank you.
Bye,
that's
guys.
Very high pace. Thank you. Okay. Bye.